Radio Prague News. The opposition civic democrat Ivan Langer has called on to Interior Minister František Bublan to resign. The Czech Land Fund has decided to review 55 contracts following accusations of shady business deals. And the head of the country's largest insurance company has a few weeks to improve its finances or else face dismissal. The deputy leader of the opposition right-of-center Civic Democrats, Ivan Langer, has called on to Interior Minister František Bublan to resign. In a TV discussion program on Sunday, he accused Mr. Bublan of failing in key areas, primarily the stabilization of the police force and the passing of a new service law. He sees the Czech police in deep crisis. Officers do not trust their superiors, lack guidance, and are inefficient, Mr. Langer says. The Czech Land or Property Fund will review some 55 real estate contracts closed from June 7th to July 1st. The fund primarily manages state-owned real estate and is accused of transferring some 600 hectares of lucrative land to speculators who won a total of 2 billion crowns in the deals. The deputy director of the fund's executive committee, Karel Machovec, says two employees have already been fired in connection with the affair. Agriculture Minister Petr Zgarba, who chairs the fund, says he'll not resign. The newly appointed Health Minister David Rath said on Sunday that the head of the VZP, the largest state-owned insurance company, faces dismissal if the bad financial situation shows no sign of improving within the next few weeks. Mr. Rath, who was named Health Minister on Friday, says VZP management fails to cooperate with other administrations and does not complete the tasks given to it by law. Lower House Deputy and former Transport Minister Martin Riemann has proposed to move some ministries and state institutions from Prague to the northern Moravian city of Ostrava. The opposition Civic Democrat says the decentralization of important state administration bodies is the only way to reduce the gap between the wealthy capital city Prague and the poorer rest of the country. The idea has been dismissed by Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek. And some 60% of Prague's Jewish community of 1,500 elected a new leadership on Sunday. The election was premature following disagreement over the community's future direction and image. The election results are expected on Monday. And a quick look at the weather. The next few days will continue to have overcast skies with scattered showers. Daytime temperatures will drop gradually to reach a maximum of 10 degrees Celsius in the middle of the week. I'm Dita Asiru, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, doctors at a tissue bank in Brno under investigation for allegedly selling human skin. Allegations of state officials passing on inside information in land transfer deals. And remember, remember, the 7th of November, the story of a forgotten holiday. Two of the country's leading skin tissue specialists and three other employees from the biggest of the country's eight tissue banks are under police investigation. They are believed to have pocketed around 1 million crowns from the sale of human skin to a skin bank in the Netherlands. Dieter Asieri reports.
At first sight, it's like something from a horror movie. For 2 years, the Czech organized crime police have been collecting evidence in an operation that it unofficially dubbed Skinners. On Friday, the investigation was made public when the head of the country's biggest skin bank, Dagmar Havranová, its former head, Jiří Adler, and three other employees were brought in for police questioning. They're believed to have removed skin grafts from dead human donors and sent them to a skin bank in the Netherlands, which then paid for the tissue with a bank transfer to the private accounts of the accused. It is estimated that they pocketed close to 1 million crowns, which is a little under $41,000 in the last 2 years. In the Czech Republic, only skin grafts from live human donors or pig skin are used for transplants. Many other European countries, including Holland, use skin taken from dead donors. The Brno Bohunice Faculty Hospital, which runs the Czech Tissue Bank, does not see the investigation as a cause for concern. At the tissue bank in Brno on Monday, it was work as usual. To the faculty hospital management, the five employees will remain innocent until proven guilty. Spokeswoman Anna Nesvadbova gave us the following statement.
Faculty Hospital Brno is informed that our employees are investigated by Czech police. Unfortunately, we are not informed about another details or further steps of Czech police. Nevertheless, we do respect rights of the accused to be considered as innocent till the final judgment.
Their client, the Euro Skin Bank, a non-profit, non-governmental organization that is based in the Dutch town of Beverwijk, pays 20 eurocents for every centimeter squared of skin. Its director, Michael Rutger, is positive that its money was not transferred to any private bank accounts.
What we do is we obtain a tissue which we send out again to other hospitals for the use in the treatment of severe burns all over Europe. So we're very thankful to the hospital that it helps us to do that work. And basically it's quite a simple procedure. They deliver skin tissue to our bank and we pay a bill, and we pay a bill in two parts, as one is to the university and one is to a foundation related to the skin bank. And those are just regular bills according to contracts, which are undersigned by all people involved. And of course, I don't know what happens with the money which comes to the university and which comes to the tissue bank. We don't know about that part of this procedure. But I'm not aware of any direct payments from us to their private bank accounts.
Mr. Rutger also sees no reason why cooperation with the Brno Hospital should be discontinued. It provided them with skin grafts from 20 dead donors, and its staff has been outstandingly professional.
We have, of course, a good relationship with the University Hospital and with the Tissue Bank. They're doing their job very well. We're very happy with the tissue they have delivered, and we've heard that there was an investigation going on by the police, which is worrying. We didn't know what it was about. And, of course, we do our quality checks and things like that, but you never know if something else is found. And after that, we stopped delivering of skin to our bank because we thought, well, let's deal with that first. And we said, well, maybe it's best if we have a new contract only and mainly with the university in order to avoid any other misinterpretation of things, not with the tissue bank itself, but with the university as an umbrella organization. And that's as soon as our colleagues are cleared, then we will just continue. The material they produce is very good.
The suspects could each face 5 years in prison if they're found guilty of the illegal handling of tissues and organs. But Czech law is somewhat vague on this issue. The doctors were authorized to remove the tissue, and there's no law that prevents them from exporting it abroad. They'll only have committed a crime if it is proven that they pocketed the money.
Allegations that state officials, including Agricultural Minister Peter Zgarba, have passed on inside information to land speculators has prompted an intensive review of land transfer and privatisation deals made this summer. At the centre of the investigation is a state-owned parcel of land sold to a friend of Minister Zgarba this summer for just $160,000, now said to have a market value of over $60 million. Brian Kennedy reports.
As Agriculture Minister, Petr Zgarba also serves as chairman of the Czech Land Fund, the government body that manages state-owned real estate. He has steadfastly denied any wrongdoing in the land deal through which his friend, Gabriel Vacera, obtained some 100 hectares of land that is now worth an estimated 370 times the original purchase price. When the story first broke last week, Mr. Zgarba claimed to have voted against the transfer in question, but the Czech daily Mladá Fronta Dnes has since reported he merely abstained from voting, and the main opposition Civic Democrats are now loudly calling for Mr. Zgarba's resignation. The land in question, part of the Prague district of Užinjevec in Prague 22, skyrocketed in value this summer after a change in the local zoning plan, which would allow for the construction of a lucrative housing project. Minister Zgarba denied having known that the district itself wanted to buy the land from the state and therefore should have been given first crack at it. The Daily Mladá Fronty Dnes published excerpts of a letter that the mayor of the Prague district allegedly sent to the fund in March this year. It warned against the possibility of speculative transfers. So far, Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has stood by his agriculture minister. This weekend, the ruling Social Democratic Party even named Mr. Zgába, a longtime party member, as election leader for the region of Vysočina. In the meantime, two members of the Czech Land Fund have been dismissed over alleged mishandling of land transfers, and Fund Vice Chairman Karol Machovec has promised that the results of an internal audit of some 170 land transfer and privatization deals will be known this year. Altogether, the deals made a tidy profit of some $80 million for alleged land speculators. At least one former member of the land board is claiming that the agriculture minister's role in the transfers was far greater than he's let on. In an interview with the online newspaper Aktuálne.cz, Roman Škopal says that another board member, whom he refused to name, urged him to sign off on a contract, as it was in Minister Zgarba's interest.
Now, November the 7th had a very special place in the calendar of communist Czechoslovakia. Preparations started well in advance to mark the Soviet national holiday, which was the anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, and celebrations would go on for another 30 days, known as the Month of Czechoslovak-Soviet Friendship. The young generation of Czechs are completely oblivious of the holiday, but as Pavla Horákova reports, some older Czechs have fond memories of the 7th of November because, unlike other communist-era holidays, it was actually often fun.
The official title of the Bolshevik coup in Russia was the Great October Socialist Revolution. The popular joke went that it was neither great nor socialist, it was not actually a real revolution, nor did it take place in October. In communist Czechoslovakia, for many days ahead of the holiday, all school children drew pictures of the Aurora cruiser, from which a blank shot signaled the start of the attack on the Winter Palace, and listened to stories about the revolution and its protagonist, Lenin. That's all history now, and for Czechs younger than 25, the date signifies nothing. This young man says he's too young for that and he doesn't know anything about the date.
To už mi nic neříká, asi.
The Great October Revolution, says this young man, that doesn't mean much to me. But ask anyone over the age of 25, and they may even recite poetry to you, like this lady. She recited the complete poem called November the 7th in Moscow by the Russian children's author Samuel Marshak, which Czech children had to learn by heart in the 1950s, and many people still remember it half a century on. But the best part of November the 7th celebrations were the so-called lantern marches. Although they were compulsory, children loved them. They gathered in front of schools in the evening, everyone carrying a paper lantern on a stick, and marched through the neighborhood. Of course, there was a lot of competition between the children as to whose lantern is the prettiest, and you were considered cool if your dad had fixed your lantern with a little bulb and a battery rather than an ordinary candle. As you can imagine, there was also a lot of mischief going on, and many lanterns ended up in flames and the little kids in tears. The last lantern marches in the country took place on November the 7th, 1989. Only 10 days later, another march of young people started the Velvet Revolution, leading to the collapse of the communist regime in Czechoslovakia.
Now, I'm not sure what kind of weekend you had, but it probably wasn't as good as Czech tennis player Tomáš Berdych's, or as bad as Sparta Prague's. David Vaughan's here with all the sports news.
Yes, that's right, Rob. The 20-year-old Czech tennis player Tomáš Berdych defied his ranking at 50th in the world on Sunday by beating 6th seed and world number 10 Ivan Ljubicic in the final at the Paris Masters. The thrilling five-setter was the climax of a tournament that saw the youthful and somewhat taciturn Czech knock out four seeds on the way. He is the second youngest player ever to win the tournament after Boris Becker in 1986. As I said, he is a man of few words, but he did talk briefly to Czech radio after the victory.
I'm just glad that this happened, that the season has ended like this. It couldn't have been better, so I'm really pleased.
A delighted Tomáš Berdych there. And interestingly, he's one of only two players to have posted victories over both Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal in the last two seasons. The other is Slovakia's Dominik Hrbatý. And staying with the sport, the 16-year-old Czech teenage wonder in the women's game, Nicole Vajdišová, ended her 18-match unbeaten run on Saturday when she was defeated by defending champion Amélie Mauresmo in the semis of the Advanta Championships in Philadelphia. It was a closely fought match with both women struggling to break serve, but in the end it was the strength of the older Frenchwoman that wore down her Czech opponent. Despite defeat, Vajdišová is the only player to have won in three consecutive tournaments on the WTA Tour this season. Over to football now, and Sparta Prague's agony continues. Over the weekend they managed to lose again, this time against the Jablonec, the sixth defeat in their last seven Gambrinus Liga games. It leaves last season's champions languishing in the lower half of the league table, this coming hot on the heels of their 3-0 defeat by Arsenal at Highbury on Wednesday, that left them at the bottom of their Champions League group, with just 1 point from four games. Sparta can take some consolation from the fact that they were more than a little unlucky against the Jablonec, but as trainer Stanislav Gliga pointed out after the game, they lack a quality striker and consistently failed to convert their chances. Elsewhere in the Gambrinus Liga, the battle for the top spot continues between North Bohemian near neighbours Liberec and Teplice. Although Teplice's unexpected 2-0 defeat by Baník Ostrava at the weekend did give Liberec some breathing space at the top, 2 points ahead going into Monday's game against Příbram. Over to ice hockey now, and there were some surprises in the Extraliga on Sunday. Vsetín, trailing in last place with only one victory under their belt so far this season, managed to hold third-place Vítkovice to a 1-1 draw. And league leaders Slavia suffered a humiliating 4-0 defeat at home at Prague's Saska Arena against another of the league's weakest teams, Třinec. Slavia had an amazing start to the season, hardly losing a point in their first 20 games. But now they've managed to lose three games in a row, two of them at home, and their performance against Třinec was probably their worst in the season so far. The league has now gone into a 10-day break, and Slavia will certainly be relieved to gain a bit of breathing space. And that's the sport.
And now it's time for our regular interview programme, One on One. My guest in this week's One on One is Miloš Sučma, chairman of the Association of Czechs and Slovaks in Canada. The group represents Canada's large Czech and Slovak diaspora, a community numbering tens of thousands of people. When Miloš came into the Radio Prague studio, I began by asking him when he arrived in the country that would become his new home.
Well, I arrived in 1968. And with my wife, and at that time I was actually a member of head office of club of committed non-parties. It's called KAN, K-A-N. And it was opposition sort of movement, and certainly Communist Party didn't like it. So
you were a political refugee.
I was fortunate that on August 21st of 1968, I was in Holland at that time. So I never returned back. So we immigrated from Paris to Canada, and we never regretted that, because I think it was the right decision, because my colleagues and so on, they were persecuted here, and some of them, they were in prison. So I really never regretted that.
Tell me also a little bit about the history of Czech and Slovak immigration to Canada. How long have Czechs and Slovaks been choosing Canada as their new home?
The main, I guess, immigration was after First War, or even before war. There was a big immigration to United States around century, from 19th and 20th century. Actually, even my family immigrated, you know, three of my cousins of my grandfather immigrated to United States, and we had just last April, we had a family reunion in Houston, Texas. There was about 70 Suchmas there. Nobody spoke Czech anymore, but they are very, very, very committed to that name and to Czech heritage. And even if they are good Americans, so they still say, well, you know, our fathers, they said, well, never forget that you came from that country.
But the main waves of emigration came after periods of great turmoil, like wars,
that's right,
and revolutions.
And also after maybe for economic reasons. And of course, after that, one big immigration wave was to escape Nazi occupation, or it was also Czech-Jewish immigration in 1939 or in 40s. And another one was, big one was political immigration in or exiles in 1948 after communist putsch. And of course 1968 after the occupation of Czechoslovakia by Soviet Union and Soviet Army.
How many people of Czech and Slovak descent are there living in Canada today?
Right now about 60,000 or 70,000, much more in the United States, if we, especially if we take second and third generation. But our association was established in 1939, just after Munich Pact. And at that time, actually, during war in 1940s, beginning of 1940s, we had about 92 branches across Canada. And it was tremendous war effort. Czechs and Slovaks joined Canadian army or even established own units. There was, for example, a pilot school in Edmonton, Alberta, where they trained pilots and crews for war in Europe, in England, and so on. It was about $5 million dollars collected from all Czechs and Slovaks at the time. It was war money, which is quite a large amount. And ladies, they knitted sweaters for soldiers and so on. So it was really quite a war effort to support allies, in that war effort.
Czechs have a reputation for not sticking together abroad, unlike, say, Polish or Jewish immigrants who form very close-knit communities in the countries to which they emigrate. Is that true of Canada? And if so, why is that?
Yes, it is. Czechs, they don't like to live in ghettos or some quarters of city. They are spreading out and they are pretty well integrating to Canadian society. However, our association, for example, has 14 branches at this moment, from Halifax to Vancouver. And it's one of the really, probably the most active immigration groups in the whole world. We do pretty well everything through internet. We have a sort of offices, basically internet office. However, we have annual congresses, we have meetings and so on. So we substitute or maybe help to internet communications with meetings and congresses and so on. So
recently your organization gave an award to the famous Machine Brothers. Do you think that ever can happen? And do you think that they should be seen as heroes and treated as such by and rewarded as such by the Czech authorities?
We believe that it will be time when many of us actually immigrated for political reasons, and we experienced, 1950s. There was terrible time in Czechoslovakia, terrible time. And if you really think about history, for example, Nazi occupation of Czechoslovakia. So people should remember this, that was a terrible time when another power in this time, Germans. They oppressed people. They oppressed own people. And very drastically, Communist Party, you know, that was a class struggle, so-called. So there were some young people and some even army officers, and so they opposed that, and they said, well, we have to fight it the same way as we fight as we fought Nazism. Some many other thousands of other people, millions of people, they were rage.
That's why they should be recognized as
heroes. They should be recognized, you know. They did it their way. Maybe they did mistakes or whatever, you know, but they did the best as they could, you know. And the fact that they escaped, and despite of 20,000 of German soldiers who really tried to catch them, and it's amazing.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Miloš Sukma, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Brings us to the end of today's program on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about it, send us an email, english@radio.cz. I'm Rob Cameron. I hope you enjoyed that program, and do join us again soon.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha, vysílání Českého rozhlasu do zahraničí.
Sie empfangen Radio Prag, die Sendungen des Tschechischen Rundfunks für das Ausland.
Czech Radio.
Vous écoutez Radio Prague, émissions internationales de la radiodiffusion tchèque.
Sintonizan Radio Praga, transmisiones de la radiodifusión checa para el exterior.